Alter, who was the father of the Musar movement, lived in the 1800s, asked a question, and he said, you look around, and we don't find that most people are in such agony, that most people are so afraid during the month of Elul. You look around, most of us are pretty composed, most of us are pretty calm. And he says, as we approach the Yom HaDin, and we know that the Gemara says that on Rosh Hashanah, Sifrei Chaim, V'Sifrei Mesim, Psuchim Lefanav, it's a very serious time of judgment for all of us. How could it be, he says, that we don't really change and modify our behavior? How is it that we're not concerned, and how is it that we are not worried? And he said that it reminded him of the following story. He said there was a person who comes into an unfamiliar community, and he's so tired, he's so exhausted from the trip, he walks into the local Beis Medrash, and he figures, I have some nice Jews here, maybe they'll help me out. He says, does anybody know where I can just get a drink? I'm so exhausted, I'm so tired. So somebody turns to him and he says, absolutely, here, there's water in the corner, please take a cup of water, no problem at all. So he goes to the water machine and he goes to fill up a cup of water, and everybody's crowding around him, they want to hear, where did you come from, we want to hear some good stories. And he says, let me just take a cup of water first. And as he's about to drink, somebody jumps out from the back of the shul and says, no, I mistakenly put some poison in that water. I was trying to put out poison for the rats, and by mistake I put it into the water cooler. I didn't realize it's not really where the rats go, and it's toxic. You cannot drink the water. And everybody's laughing at him. What is this guy, crazy? You're really going to believe him that he put toxic material into the water? That's not true. Of course, the water is water. It's not a problem at all. It's purified water. You can't even get into the pipes. He says, imagine this person. Do you think that he would take the chance to drink the water or not? There's a 2% chance that maybe the water is toxic. There's a 5% chance that maybe this is lethal, that maybe this is fatal. He's not going to take that chance. As thirsty as he is, and as much as he wants it, and as crazy as this individual seems to him, he's not going to try it. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, do we not believe that there's at least a 2% chance that this Rosh Hashanah is going to be lethal? Do we not believe that there's a 5% chance that maybe this Rosh Hashanah is going to be more serious than the last one? So says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, why would you take a chance? Why wouldn't you take advantage of the opportunity that Chodesh Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Aseres Yimei Tshuva give all of us? Is there not some kind of risk? Is there not some sort of threat that we should feel when we come closer to the season of Rosh Hashanah? Is that so far out of our realm of possibility? And therefore, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, it's a good time for us to start thinking at the beginning of Chodesh Elul what this month really means to all of us. Reb Chaim Sanzer, who is one of the most important Hasidic Rebbes in the end of the 1700s into the mid-1800s, he was the father, the founder of the Kleisenberger Hasidus. So he said that there are many Jews who very sincerely and very genuinely have a plan for how they're going to engage in the process of tshuva. And he said they start to think about it, and they go to Slichus, and they wonder, how am I going to change this? How am I going to do that? And all these grandiose plans. And then he says, somehow we often see that it doesn't really come to fruition. Somehow we see that it doesn't really turn into anything. And he wonders, how can that be? So he said that he was reminded of a woman who lives in a simple village, and she was a very poor woman, and she was destitute. She had nothing to provide for her family. And every night she came home, and they were able to take the leftover scraps that they found in the garbage pails down the block, and they were scurrying around the whole neighborhood to try to find whatever it is that they could. And one fine day, although every day she came home looking so downtrodden, looking so upset, and she was in such a bad mood because she really couldn't take care of her family, one fine day the kids see how she walks into the house, and she's so happy and she's so excited, and they ask her, what happened today? Why are you so happy? And she says, you won't believe it. This is the answer to all of our problems. We'll never be poor again. Why? So she's holding an egg in her hand. And they said, why is the egg the answer to our problems? She says, why is the egg the answer to our problems? Do you not know what we can do with an egg? You know, we have a neighbor who has a hen. Somebody gave me an egg today. That means I can bring it to the neighbor's house, and we can have the hen lay down on this egg. And then at some point, the egg will become a chick. Then we'll take that, and it will be able to have its own eggs. From that, we're going to start selling eggs. From all the money that we make, we're then going to buy a cow. Then we're going to start selling milk. From all the milk that we sell from the cow, we're going to be able to then invest all of our money in buying a house. Then we're going to become multimillionaires from all the real estate we're going to buy, all from this little egg. Is this not the answer to all of our problems? And as she's singing and dancing in the house and telling them about all of her great fantasy, the egg drops on the floor and it cracks. And said Reb Chaim Sanzer, in one moment, all of those dreams, all of those fantasies, all of those imaginations that she has about the egg turning into something bigger, which then is going to translate into something else, which then is going to mean buying a house and having real estate and being a multimillionaire, all of that dissipates in 1 second. And said Reb Chaim Sanzer, somehow that is what happens when we think about the tshuva process. And we're very genuine and we're very sincere, and there are people who are very excited about it. And you have all kinds of grandiose plans and imaginations of how this is going to save us and this is going to be the answer to a meaningful life. And unfortunately, he says, sometimes you're so busy with the planning and with the imagining and thinking and what are we going to do and how are we going to do it and this year's going to be amazing, that you don't actually make the time to do something. And in the interim, the egg cracks, all of the inspiration phase, and everything's gone. And said Reb Chaim Sanzer, it's our job, it's our opportunity to make sure that as we go through the process of tshuva, as we experience all of the inspiration of Chodesh Elul, of Rosh Hashanah, of Yom HaKippurim, we don't just leave it at that. We also need to make sure that we make time, not just to make this into an imagination, into a fantasy, but into something that is a reality. How are we going to make a concrete change in the way that we live our life? And my grandfather always used to tell all of his contemporaries, my grandfather was one of the members of the school of thought of the Bali Musar from Europe. And my grandfather always used to write a Kabbalah every year on Rosh Hashanah. And my mother once told me that they saw at the end of his life, he had a drawer that was filled with all of the Kabbalos every year, all of the things he took upon himself. And they were so simple. He said, this year I'm going to make sure that I do Shnai Mikra every week with Rashi. My grandfather was a Rosh Hashiva in Tarva Das for 40 years. I'm sure he did Shnai Mikra anyway. But he said, this year I'm going to be very careful to do it the way I'm supposed to. And he wrote very simple things, and that really, say the Bali Musar, is the way that we need to approach the tshuva season. It's not about making grandiose plans, because we know those never work out. It's about taking something small, it's about focusing on an area of life that we have the ability to make an impression on, that we can actually change, and that, says Reb Chaim Sanzer, is something we need to think about. Don't allow the egg to crack while you're making all of your grandiose plans and imaginations and dreams of what it is that can come out of the year. Make some kind of Kabbalah, make some kind of commitment that will be a meaningful one for the year that will come. One of the early founders of the Musar movement, not only Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, but one of the other members was also Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, who was also known as Rabbi Itzela Petterberger. My father actually told me this past year, he went this summer to visit St. Petersburg. That was one of the places that they went. And on their way, before they got ready for their trip, my father was really in a panic because this is the time of year in the summer when there is no sunset. What's it called? The white night? Correct? So he was very concerned. What are we going to do about Shkia? What are we going to do about Shabbos? When does Shabbos start? When does Shabbos end? When do we make Kiddush? When do we make Abdallah? And he was very concerned about it. So he asked us to look into it and to find out what do people say about this issue. So we started to look into it. And my father said, how can it be? Reb Itzela Petterberger lived in St. Petersburg. That's why his name was Petterberger. And he has so many tshuvas about everything under the sun. How come he didn't tell us? What did he do every time he encountered this issue of the Shkia, the sun not setting and the sun rising or not rising? What do you do about that? That is a common issue that you face if you live on that part of the world. Anyway, he really existed, Reb Itzela Petterberger, and he was one of the great Bali Musar, and he said, you'll look around and you'll notice that most people are not really worried around this time of year. Very much like the sentiment of Reb Yisrael Salanter. And he said, in the days of yore, it used to be that people would tremble and they would shake when they heard the word Elul. Then we came to Slichos and we came to Rosh Hashanah. Everybody was crying. And he says, for some reason, you look around the world and everybody seems to be very calm. Everyone thinks, I'm safe. And everybody thinks it will all be fine. Why is that? Why is that we're not afraid? And he says, perhaps the reason why is because we look at what happened last year and we say, well, I went through the season of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur last year. And I'm still here, and I'm intact, and I seem to have come out unscathed. So why should I be concerned? I went through this process last year. Everything seemed to be okay. I'll be all right this year as well. And he said, often that's why we feel that we will be okay. But the Duvna Magid says that that sometimes is a big mistake. And that is not a reason to believe that just because everything was okay last year, it means everything will be okay once again this year. And that is a painful phenomenon, is a painful reality for us to think about. Just simply look around the world, or look around our own community and think about how many people's lives have changed so drastically from last year to this year. How many people have lost their jobs? How many people have lost loved ones? How many people are suffering from all kinds of illnesses? And they could be the healthiest members of our community, and somehow the Ribono Shel Olam gave them some kind of illness that is devastating. And we have so much of that going on just in our own immediate community, and so many people who have tzaras with their children, and so many people who are dealing with so many different kinds of issues, and yet all of that happen from last Rosh Hashanah to this Rosh Hashanah? So number one, don't be so confident. Life can change in a moment's notice, and we know that that is true. But aside from that, says the Dubin HaMagid, an amazing mashal. I'm a tremendous fan of the Dubin HaMagid, not that he needs my stamp of approval, but the Vilna Gaon was a big fan of the Dubin HaMagid, and he used to, in fact, invite the Dubin HaMagid to give him Musar. So I always felt, if the Vilna Gaon felt strongly of the Mishalim of the Dubin HaMagid, it means there's something there. It's not just a story. It means it's a very important story that the Dubin HaMagid used to say. So I made it my business. I read a lot of the Mishalim of the Dubin HaMagid over the years, and I try to share them as much as I can. So here's an amazing mashal that the Dubin HaMagid gives. And he says, he thinks that is a mistake. He thinks we have a misconception when we believe that just because everything was okay last year on Rosh Hashanah, so we'll make it through this process of the year, this process of Rosh Hashanah, we'll make it through this year okay as well. And he says the following mashal. He says there were two very simple businessmen, simple merchants, who opened small shops in their communities. And he says they had a very meager income, but they did business, and they had customers who came in every day, and they were able to bring home a minimum amount of money every week that was able to provide for their families. The only problem was that there was also a local tax, and they weren't able to provide enough money to also pay the local tax. They were able to pay for food and shelter and the basic necessities of the family, but the taxes, they had no money left to pay that. So they ignored it. And one year they ignored the tax, and the second year they ignored the tax, and the third year they ignored the tax. And finally, the local municipality sends them a notice. After 3 years of evading the taxes, they send them a notice. Hey, both of you own a business. Both of you are members of this community. You have a obligation to pay the taxes. All businesses in this community have to pay taxes, and you are not exempt. So what's happening? And they ignore the notice, and they say, look, we don't have any money. What are we supposed to do? We don't make enough to pay you. So they ignore it. Comes the fourth year, and they ignore it once again. Comes the fifth year, finally the municipality decides we need to arrest them. So they come one day, and they do a sting operation, and they take this man and his wife and all of his children, and they incarcerate them. And they throw them into a pit. And they say, you guys are going to live out the rest of your lives here. You've evaded the taxes for 5, 6, 7 years. It's been too long already. You can't continue on like this. And they detain them, and there seems to be no hope for the future. The entire family is stuck down there, both of these families, of the two shops, of the two merchants who lived in this town. After a week being in this horrible condition of these terrible oppression that they're facing down in this pit, one of them says, you know, he asked the jail warden, would you mind, I would love to have a word with the one who put me here. Why do you want to talk to him? He says, I have an idea. He says, okay. So he sets up a meeting, and he goes to the mayor of the town, and he says, look, you're not going to gain anything by leaving me here. It's not going to get you the money that I owe you. I don't have the opportunity to make any money, so let's make a deal. How about you'll take me out of jail, and I promise you, for the next year, myself, my wife and my 5 children will all work for you. We'll all do community service. You ask us to do anything, we will do it. And as the year goes on, you will slowly reduce the amount of money that we owe you based on the amount of work that we do. And after a year or two, we will finish up all of our quota, and then you will deduct all of the money that we owe, and then we'll be done. And that's the way you'll get back the money for your taxes. No reason for us to sit in jail. Interesting idea, the mayor says. Okay, I'm willing to accept that. Let's try it. Comes back to jail, sees his good old friend down there, and he says, "Nu, how did it go?" He says, "I made a deal." "What was the deal?" He says, "I told the mayor, I'll go out with my entire family, myself, my wife, and my 5 children. We will do community service. We will do anything you want, and we will slowly reduce the amount of money that we owe. We will deduct every week the amount that that week's worth of work was, and then after a year or two, we will pay off all of our debt." "Okay." Nice idea, but his friend says to him, "Are you crazy? Are you crazy? You're willing to submit yourself to do work, and not only you? You're going to put your wife through this and your children? What's wrong with you? Why would you do that?" "I have a better idea. I'm going to go negotiate with the mayor for myself." So he goes, he makes a meeting with him. He comes to the mayor, he says, "Look, you can keep me in jail for the rest of my life. It's not going to do you any good. I've been here 2 weeks. It's oppressive. It's horrible conditions. But I'm never going to pay you back the money that I owe. I never will have the ability to pay you back. So I have an idea." "Yeah, let's hear your idea." "How about putting me back at home? I'll go back to my store. And now that I know how painful it is to sit in jail, I will invest of myself, I will double my efforts to make sure that I make enough money and I have enough customers to pay the taxes. That's the only way we're going to get out of this. If I stay in jail for the rest of my life, you'll never make a penny for my family. So why not give me the opportunity to spend another year going back to my business, recreating myself, understanding what my responsibilities are? Let me try again. Okay, nice idea. Nice idea. So one fine day, the one who took the community service is doing his work outside, and he passes by his friend who has the store open again. And he's thinking to himself, I am so jealous of this man. Here he is, running his own store, living in his own house, making money every day. He has customers coming in, he has clients, he has people who are buying from him, he's selling to them. It's a wonderful life that he's living, and I'm here stuck every single day with my wife and all of my children, and we make no money. And all the hard work that we do goes straight back into the municipality, into the mayor's own pocket. Why does this make sense? My friend got the better end of the deal. A year and a half passes by, and one day they meet up with each other. And the owner of the business looks at his friend and he says, you know, I'm so jealous of you. You're jealous of me? What do you mean? You've been on your own. The mayor let you go and open your store again. You have customers. You're buying, you're selling. He says, yeah. But you know, all of those efforts, all of that was so ineffective. I opened the same business. I had the same no business that I had beforehand. I didn't make any more money than I ever made in the past. And now I'm stuck because you know what's going to happen? The mayor's going to come to me and say, you made nothing. Now you're going to sit in jail for the rest of your life. I see that letting you out does nothing. And he says, I'm so jealous of you. You worked hard for a year, you worked hard for a year and a half, but now you're free, now you're done. You paid off all your debt and now I'm going to be stuck for the rest of my life because I was given the opportunity and I squandered it. And it was ineffective and it was in vain and there was no purpose at all to what I did. Says the Dubna Magid, the Ribbono Shel Olam puts us all on this world. And he says, it is a beautiful world, and the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to enjoy it. Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel, the first thing Adam HaRishon is told, is enjoy the world. Ru'u Ba'aretz V'Chivshuha, go around and take advantage of the entire world that I've given you. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it. And yet, he says, the Ribbono Shel Olam demands of us that there is a tax that you need to pay. There is a tariff, there is an assessment that I will make of the life that you live. And what is that? It is the Torah that I ask you to keep. It is the mitzvahs that I ask you to observe. It is the Maisim Tovim. It is all the different activities that we as Jews are supposed to be involved in. That is our tax. The Ribbono Shel Olam comes and he says, after 1 year, I see you're not paying the taxes. Okay, we'll ignore you. Let you get away. 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. He sends us a notice and he says, well, maybe you're going to think about the fact that you've evaded the taxes 5, 6, 7, 10 years already. How long can we let this go on? So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I'm going to make life difficult for you. And we say, come on, give me a chance. Don't do that to me. What are you going to gain from throwing me in jail, from destroying my life? What is the point? Let me go out, open my business again, give me an opportunity, I'll pay it back to you. So says the Dubna Magid, that's what we claimed last year. That's what we claimed 2 years ago, that's what we claimed 3 years ago, and 4 years ago, and 5 years ago. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said every time, okay, go back out into the world, enjoy yourselves, do whatever it is, and you'll pay me back, and you'll do it. And then, after time goes by, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, it's been 5 years already, I gave you an opportunity, it's been 6 years, 7 years, how many opportunities can I give you? And you're not paying the taxes, and you continue to never pay the taxes. Says the Dubna Magid, that is something that as the years go on, our fear should accumulate. We should be more concerned because the Ribbono Shel Olam continues to allow us to get away with this. How many times can he let that happen? Says the Dubna Magid, it's a perspective to think about as we get closer to Rosh Hashanah. That is the Demei HaSchiros that he says. That is the assessment, that is the price we need to pay, and that is the tax that is levied upon all of us at this time of year. And perhaps as the years go on, as we become older and older, we need to be even more concerned. And I always think, what is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam has done for us when he created us? So the Pasuk in Sefer Koheles writes, Levad re'ezem atzasi, asher asa ha'elokim asa adam yasher. The Ribbono Shel Olam created all of us to be fair and upstanding, moral and respectable people. He created us to be yesharim, to be straight and honest people. But the Pasuk then says, v'heim bikshu cheshbonos rabim. What does it mean, heim bikshu cheshbonos rabim? We make life complicated and convoluted. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us to be adam yasher, to be straight people. And we make life complicated. Heim bikshu cheshbonos rabim. Some explain, my father writes this in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, but others say the same thing. Perhaps this is the representation in the Tkiyas Shofar. Perhaps this is what it is that we do when we blow the Shofar throughout Chodesh Elul and on Rosh Hashanah as well. We start with a Tkiya, and then we go to a Shvarim Chirua, and then we do a Tkiya again. The Tkiya is to represent Elokim Asa Esa Adam Yasher. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us, Tkiya. Life is meant to be lived straight, like an upstanding, honest person, virtuous. And then Shvarim Chirua, somehow, Heim Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. Life just becomes very complicated. And we add a lot to that complication because we have so many different things going on and we have so many different values that are antithetical to the values that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be living by. And that perhaps is represented in the Shvarim Chirua. But then you have the opportunity to once again straighten it all out, to have that Tkiya in the end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us that opportunity with Tshuva to make all of those Shvarim Chiruas, all that complication, to straighten it out once again. You started life like that and you can have life continue on that path if only you get back to where you were supposed to be. Now, how is it possible for a person to get back on the track? I was thinking that the Pasuk writes in Sefer Mishlei, "Bechal derachecha da'ehu." We should try our best to seek out and to explore and pursue an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. "V'hu yiyasher archosecha." Sometimes when you have somebody who's so far off, whose perspective is so skewed, whose perception is so distorted, it's hard for them to really get a proper perspective back again. And you need an outsider to bring them back to the reality. For example, they say a story about a person who is inebriated. And sometimes they do a test to measure how much alcohol he's drunk, his level of sobriety, I think it's called. So they put in a straight line and they say, "Can you walk in the straight line?" So they say that this drunken man is looking at the straight line and he says, "Maybe if you'll move the line to be this way, then I'll be able to walk down the straight line. It's crooked now." So why does he think that way? Because his perception is so distorted. It's not just that he doesn't understand how he's supposed to go about doing this. It's that he sees the entire world as being crooked. That which is straight is now crooked in his perception. And the same goes for all of us. It is almost impossible for a person, after we've gotten so lost in the crookedness of life and all the complication, in the cheshbonos rabim that human beings have in this world, it is almost impossible to get back on that derech hayasher. How do you do that? Bechal derechecha da'eyu. Try to explore, try to seek out a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'hu yiyasher archosecha. You need that external third party to sometimes realign your perspective, to sometimes bring back your perception to where it needs to be, and to make that straight line clear to you and obvious where we're headed, where we're supposed to be going, where we're coming from, and what life is supposed to be all about. That is the job of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is really the opportunity that we have. Dirshu Hashem Behi Matzo. Now at this time of year is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is found. Now is the time when we're supposed to be seeking Him out. Why? V'hu yiyasher archosecha. Because He will be able to straighten out that path again. He'll bring us back from the original Tkiya when it got lost with the Shvarim Chirua. He'll bring us back to the Tkiya, to that lifestyle of being an Adam Yasher, the way we are supposed to be. Sir Rav Soloveitchik has a very beautiful essay. And for some reason it's not printed in his Al HaTshuva. I guess it didn't fit in there to his discussion, but I saw it in one of his other books, and it's very, very beautiful, and it's very relevant to what we're discussing here. And he says that he believes that human beings, with all their complications, with all the Shvarim Chirua, it's not because we are evil, it's not because, as he says, that we want to revolt against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why is it that we make life so complicated? Why is it that sometimes life goes on a very different path than the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended it to be? And then he quotes a pasuk that we say in Hallel all the time, a pasuk in Tehillim, that I really never thought about until I saw this. Ani amarti b'chavzi, kal ha'adam kozev. What does it mean? Kal ha'adam kozev means, I said, ani amarti b'chavzi, I said, kal ha'adam kozev, that all men are liars. All men are living dishonest lives. Men, we mean men and women. So what does it mean? All of humanity is living a lie? What is this lie about? Sir Rav Soloveitchik writes, what kind of lie did David HaMelech have in mind when he hurled the serious accusation at man in general? What does he mean? Kal ha'adam kozev? Everybody's lying? Did he have in mind a lie in which I tell you? Did he refer to the everyday social lie? Did he refer to the commercial lie of the dishonest businessman, to the political lie of the faithless ruler? Does man indeed engage constantly in immoral lying? Is that what he means? Kala Adam Kozev? Do we really believe that everybody we talk to every single day is lying to us? Can't be. So what does he mean? David HaMelech, Kala Adam Kozev. Every man is a liar. Nothing is truthful about the way we live life. Explains Rav Soloveitchik. David HaMelech is concerned with a different kind of lie, and that is the existential lie that man tells, not others, but himself. We all live a paradoxical lifestyle inside of ourselves, not in our relationship with others. But it's a complicated internal lie that we all live. And where does that come from? It is not because we're evil. He explains the following, and he takes us back to the original human being, to Adam HaRishon. And there HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam HaRishon, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim Es HaAdam Afar Min HaAdam. The Torah says, how was Adam HaRishon created? It was not the Big Bang theory, that's not what we believe in. The Torah tells us exactly what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Afar Min HaAdam. Now we have a understanding that whenever there is a hey at the beginning of the word, it means something special, something unusual. HaAdam. So what does it mean? He took the ground from the Adama. What's the Adama? What's the most important ground in the world? So the Medrash has two opinions. Opinion number one is, he took Afar Me'arba Kanfos Ha'aretz, from the entire Adama. He spanned the entire globe, the entire cosmos. He took a little bit of dirt from each of the locations, and with that he created Adam HaRishon. That's position number one. Opinion number two, says the Medrash, is, he took Afar Min HaAdama, from the most important ground in the world, which is what? The Torah says, Mizbach Adama Taseli. There will be a generation where you will make a Beis Hamikdash, where you will be Makriv Karbanos on the Adama. That is the most holy and sacred ground in the world. That is the Mizbeach, that is the Beis Hamikdash, that is Har Moriah, and that is where Adam HaRishon's origins are from. From the Beis Hamikdash. Says Rav Soloveitchik, this is the inner schism that we all have inside of us. We have two different dimensions that are both pulling in different directions. He suggests this is not a machlokas in the Medrash of where Adam originated from, but they are both true. We have two aspects to our personalities. Number one, he says, we were created as people who are so inquisitive, who are so interested in being a part of every aspect of this world. Min ha'adama, from the entire world, we want to be a part of everything. And he argues it's not good enough that man is able to conquer the entire world. We say, we want to even conquer the moon. And not only do we want to send lunar modules up there, we want to send human beings up there. We want to be everywhere. We are up for min ha'adama. That is part of our job, to be involved in every aspect of the world. That's what we want to do, instinctively. At the same time, we have another force that pulls us back to our roots. We have another force that tells us, remain with the Beis HaMikdash. That's where you originate from. That's where your life is. Elokim asa es ha'adam yashar. You're not meant to be involved in everything that goes on in the world. You are meant to be a person whose location, whose home, and whose comfort zone always is by Mizbach Adama Ta'asali. And says Rav Soloveitchik, that is why human beings always have such a tension. On the one hand, we are pulled always to the Afar Min HaAdama, to that place which is Beis HaMikdash, which is our home. That is where we belong. That's where we feel most comfortable. On the other hand, he says, we always have this opposing position, which is, how do we deal with the fact that we are Radu Ba'aretz V'Chivshua, that we're always supposed to be involved in all that goes on in the world? How do we deal with those two conflicting perspectives that human beings always have to deal with? And that's what he says it means, Kal HaAdam Kozev. Not that we intentionally go around lying to people, but that our very existence is one big paradox. It's one big schism. It's difficult to really understand, where does man fall? What is our objective? Where are we supposed to be pulling? What should we be doing? What is the right direction? It is always an eternal conflict that we have as human beings, because that's the way we were created, with both of those aspects, with both of those elements. And he writes so beautifully. He often used to travel, because he lived in Boston and he gave shiur in YU, so he was back and forth on a plane every week. And he writes that often when he was in the airport, he would see that there was a double coffin containing the body of a Jew who had lived, worked, raised children, prospered or failed in the United States. And he said often he would see that aron, that coffin, on its way to be flown to Eretz Yisrael. It is being shipped for burial in the land of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The mystery of the origin apparently casts a spell even upon people who have few religious commitments. He writes, it always baffled him. when he would see people who weren't really living a religious lifestyle, and yet their only wish was, I should be buried in Eretz Yisrael. What pulls you to Eretz Yisrael? Why is that? And he says, it doesn't matter how many mistakes you may have made, how little of a commitment you may have had, you instinctively feel that you are afar min ha'adama. That's your home. That's where you belong. And that is something that always pulls a human being back to that place. But we have Ehem bikshu cheshbonos rabin. Elokim asa es ha'adam yasher. He created us to be upstanding citizens, virtuous, righteous human beings, and yet, unfortunately, sometimes life gets very complicated. And we make it complicated sometimes. That's the shvarim teruah. But we have the opportunity. V'hu yiyasher archosecha. If only you latch on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He will give you that clarity. He will once again show you how the right perspective should be lived and the right way of life should be experienced. One of the very inspiring psukim that I read this summer, first time I ever learned some of the, some of the Sifrei HaTanach, sometimes are neglected. So around Tisha B'Av, I was reading a lot of the Nevuahs in Yirmiyah and Yechezkel, where they talk about the destruction, they talk about what was going to happen. And one of the very inspiring psukim that I saw in Sefer Yirmiyah is something that really is a extremely significant, a pivotal and critical point to the entire understanding of tshuva. So the Navi Yirmiyah writes, he basically laments the fact and he agonizes over the fact, Hinani nishpat oscha, he says, I am giving Musar, basically he is admonishing the Jewish people, Al amareich lo chatasi. Why am I upset at you, he says? It is because you say, lo chatasi. It is because you say, I haven't done anything wrong. And because you fail to admit and to recognize or acknowledge that you yourself have done something that can use some kind of tshuva process. And what I found interesting about this is, the Navi Yirmiyah is not saying, God is angry at you because you have made mistakes. After all, the Pasuk says, Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechta. The nature of a human being is to make a mistake. As much as we don't like it, as much as we don't want to, we all make mistakes. This is life. This is what happens. But yet the Navi Yirmiyah says, my claim against the Jewish people is not that they've done things wrong. Everybody does something wrong. My claim is, Al amareich lo chatasi, that you go about life assuming that you've done nothing wrong. And that, he says, is a bigger crime. That, he says, is something that is much harder to fix. If a person doesn't believe that there's anything wrong, you'll never believe that you need to fix it either. And therefore, he says, that is his admonishing of the Jewish people. That is what he agonizes over, that they don't believe that there's anything that needs fixing at all. In Tehillim, David HaMelech says, Chatasi odi acha. He says, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I will admit that I've done things wrong. Va'avoni lo kisisi. I did not try to cover over the fact that I made mistakes. I'm honest with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it doesn't mean we go around telling our friends all the terrible things we've done. We don't believe that we have an obligation to go tell the rabbi, like some religions tell their priest, and you make a confession. That's not the way we believe. It's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's between you and God. But don't deny it. The Ribono Shel Olam understands what we're all about. Ki hu yada yitzreinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the way He created us. He knows that we are a conflicted being. He knows that we're all human beings. He knows Adam ein tzadik v'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechta. But His claim is, Al amareich lo chatasi. How can you go on with life believing that there's nothing that needs any fixing, that there's no part of your life that needs any perfection? That is the claim that Yirmiyah HaNavi suggest to the Jewish people. The Sefer Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech writes, Mechase peshav lo yatzliach. Somebody who lives a life of denial, somebody who lives a life of non-acceptance, I don't believe that there's anything wrong, lo yatzliach, you will never be able to be successful. Like in a job, somebody who's never willing to listen to anyone's criticism, even if it's constructive criticism. For anyone who is in any administrative position and you have people working under you, you know that those who work under you and are never willing to listen to any suggestions that anyone above them has or any of their colleagues, they will never grow. They will never be successful. And that is the same thing that the Navi and Sefer Mishlei writes, Mechase peshav lo yatzliach. Somebody who just tries to whitewash all of their mistakes and live a life of denial, lo yatzliach. You will never be successful. Umode ve'ozev yirucham. On the other hand, he says, somebody who is honest, somebody who is forthcoming, somebody who is able to admit their own guilt, Umode ba'ozev. And because of that, you are willing to do something to distance yourself from it. Yerucham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will help that person. I will have rachmanis on them. And I thought that this was a very critical aspect to tshuva. Not only because the Navi Yirmiyah suggests that is his claim against the Jewish people, but because if you look through Tanakh, you will find so many stories where the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared almost to allow somebody to get away with the mistake that they've made, but it's because the fact that they were in denial that he then doubles down on them. For example, a number of examples, and we'll end in the next 5 or 6 minutes. If I were to ask you, who is a greater tzaddik? Was it Shaul HaMelech? Or was it David HaMelech? What would you say? Show of hands. All those who think Shaul, raise your hand. All those who believe David, raise your hand. David goes down as Noam Zemiris Yisrael. He's such a great king. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. Look, he wrote Tehillim. So the answer is you're both right. Shaul HaMelech was a great tzaddik. David HaMelech was also. However, the Gemara says that Shaul HaMelech totally outshined David. The accomplishments of Shaul were so out of this world. There was nothing about the life of David that was able to measure up to the life of Shaul HaMelech. In fact, the Pasuk says in Shmuel Aleph, Ben Shana Shaul B'Malcho. It says that Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old when he became the king. Really? How can he be the king at 1 year old? What does that mean? Says the Gemara, it means, in Yuma Chavbeis, Kiven Shana Lechet. It means he was 50 years old, or however old he was. He was like a 1 year old. A 1 year old has never done an Aveira. Shaul HaMelech, when he was in his older age, he never violated an Aveira. That was Shaul HaMelech. Pretty amazing personality. So the Gemara says clearly, Shaul HaMelech was a great tzaddik. And yet, the Gemara then tells us that for some reason, Shaul HaMelech makes one mistake in his life. And because of that one mistake, God says, Vayim Ascha Hashem LaMelech. You're done. Your life is over. And yet the Gemara says, you contrast that with David HaMelech, who made 2 major mistakes in his life, did 2 terrible Averos, and David HaMelech gets away with it, and he moves on. What is the one mistake of Shaul? What are the 2 mistakes of David? So the story of Shaul HaMelech is he becomes king. One of the important aspects of being a king is the king has a job to fight wars. One of the jobs of fighting a war is you have to destroy Amalek. Now, how that's going to play out whenever Mashiach comes, I have no idea. I don't understand what we're going to do then. Nobody really knows who Amalek really is. So when Mashiach comes, he'll figure out what to do. Until then, Shaul HaMelech has a job. He needs to wipe out the nation of Amalek. And he goes all out war. And he kills every member of Amalek as he's supposed to. Vayachmo Shaul. In the end, he decides to have some rachmanus. He's a kind-hearted person. He's a sensitive soul. And Shaul decides to keep 1 member of Amalek alive. Not only that, Shaul decides that he's going to keep maybe the animals alive, correct? That's what Shaul HaMelech decided to do. Why? Not because self-aggrandizement. He wanted to take those and offer them as karbanos. Where else are we going to get karbanos? We feel such a sense of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, that's the mistake of Shaul HaMelech. Made a terrible mistake. Let's think about the 2 mistakes of David HaMelech. What did he do? David HaMelech made a tremendous Chilul Hashem. What was the Chilul Hashem? He has his eyes on some woman, and he figures out a whole scheme, a whole way of getting that woman to be married to him. So did he violate the law? Technically, no. He made sure that the husband gave a get to his wife before he went away. But come on, what kind of life is that? You set up a whole system to get a husband to leave his wife, and then you take her? What a Chilul Hashem. What a tremendous Chilul Hashem. And the Gemara says that when somebody violates an Avera of Chilul Hashem, it is something, Echad Shogeg ve'echad Mezid b'Chilul Hashem. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no tolerance for Chilul Hashem. You do something wrong, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can handle it. Chilul Hashem, the Gemara says, sometimes, Ein kapar b'lo misa. The Gemara Numa Daf Pei Vav. The only way to get around the Chilul Hashem is with death. There is no way to do tshuva for a terrible Chilul Hashem. You have to be so careful. That's what David HaMelech did. So you measure these 2 Averas, and you look at Shaul HaMelech. What did he do already? He did exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him to do, minus 1%. He did 99% of the job. What did David HaMelech do? He went against the Dvar Hashem. He makes a Chil Hashem. He doesn't do anything good with the action that he was involved with. And yet Shaul is not forgiven. David HaMelech is. David HaMelech violates an Aver Bikum Va'aseh. He actively engages in doing something wrong. He takes this woman who was not really supposed to be destined to him. Shaul HaMelech passively violates an Aver. So how do you understand the difference between Shaul and David? Why was Shaul punished so harshly? Why was his life taken away from him? Why was he destroyed after this mistake and David HaMelech was not? Answers the Medrash in Tehillim as follows. Go back to that pasuk we just mentioned. Mecha sepeshav lo yatzliach. Somebody who lives a life of denial. Somebody who's not willing to admit that they made a mistake. Lo yatzliach, says the Medrash, that is a reference to Shaul HaMelech. And the end of the pasuk that says, Modeh ve'ozev Yerucham, that God will have mercy on somebody who's willing to admit, Zeh David. Now, where do you find this contrast between Shaul and David? Well, says the Navi, when Shaul made this terrible mistake and he kept Agag alive, immediately in Shmuel Aleph we are told that the Navi comes to have a word with him. And he says, what happened? Baruch atah LaHashem, Hakimosi Devar Hashem. Shaul is so proud. I've done everything God asked of me to do. And Shmuel says to him, really, is that true? Umer kol hatzon azeba aznai, you've done everything God asked you to do. Why is it that I hear there are some sheep that are making noise in the background? It must be that you didn't kill all of them. Why did you keep them alive? And he says, well, you know, asher chamal ha'am, it wasn't really me. The nation was putting pressure on me, and they said they wanted to bring it for karma, giving all kinds of answers and excuses. And then Shmuel says, Lama lo shamata b'kol Hashem, atas harabe eni Hashem. And Shaul is in complete denial. He will not own up to his mistake. That's what the pasuk says, Mecha sepeshav lo yatzliach. You can make a mistake, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is understanding. But when you deny it, when you're not willing to admit, when you're not willing to be honest with the Ribono Shel Olam, that's where there's a problem. Vayim ascha Hashem lemelech. That's why Shaul was not given a second chance. It was too late. David HaMelech, on the other hand, we're told when the Navi comes to him, Nasan HaNavi comes to give tochacha to David HaMelech. If you know the story, he gives him a whole mashal, and he says, can you imagine if there was a poor man who had a sheep, would you take the sheep away from him if that was his only part, whatever. And David HaMelech realizes immediately, I made a mistake. And he admits to his mistake, and he says right away, Chatasi LaHashem. Yes, I've done something wrong. And he owns up to his mistake. So yes, was it a far worse error than Shaul HaMelech? Probably was. Was it a Chilul Hashem that is much worse than that mistake that Shaul HaMelech did? Probably. But he's willing to admit immediately, Chatasi LaHashem. If you're willing to say that, then perhaps the Ribono Shel Olam is willing to let it go. As we said, Mechase Peshav Lo Yatzliach, Umode Ve'ozav Yerucham. That is what the Navi Yirmiyah said as well. That what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a claim against the Jewish people is not so much that they've made the mistake in the first place, but Al Amircha Lo Chatasi. It's because you are living a life of denial. You're not willing to admit to the fact that there's a problem at all, and that is really where the greatest problem comes in. And this is found so many different times. Look at Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon, when God calls out to him and he says, Ayeka, and he wants to know what happened. And Adam HaRishon says, Hamin Ha'etz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks him, Hamin Ha'etz, Asher Tzivisicha Levilti Echol Achalt, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks him, did you eat from the tree? I just have a simple question. Adam HaRishon says, oh, well, this, that, Ha'isha, it's not me, it's my wife, I didn't realize. Stop giving excuses. It's not until those excuses that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and says, you know what, you've lost it, you blew it. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroy his life immediately when he violated the Aver? The answer is because he allows a human being to admit to his mistake as long as we're willing to be honest enough to admit to it, to recognize that we have made a mistake. Mechase peshav lo yatzliach. Look at the story of Cain and Hevel. Cain kills his brother Hevel. You would think HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take immediate retribution from Cain. You should kill him right away. But he doesn't. What happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Cain and he says, Hey Hevel Achicha, where's Hevel? I'm just curious. I created two brothers. I only see one of them. What happened to him? And Cain says, what does that have to do with me? Hashomer Achi Anochi. It's not my problem. What did I do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, you deny it. You live a life of denial. You live a life of non-acceptance. You're not willing to recognize the reality of the life that you live, of how many mistakes you've made, of the awful mistake that you just made. Mechasa peshav lo yatzliach. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Kayin, now you're doomed for failure. You will never be successful. Because such a pivotal part, such an integral segment of what the tshuva process is about is, first of all, to just be honest about the fact that something has gone wrong. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechta. Kadosh Baruch Hu understands every human being makes mistakes, and mistakes are okay. We all make mistakes, everybody on their own level. That is why tshuva is one of the aspects of life that was created before humanity came into existence. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created tshuva before Briyas HaAdam. Before Adam HaRishon was created, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that man was going to make a mistake. He gave him the opportunity of tshuva. And Adam HaRishon blew it when he wasn't able to admit to his mistake. That was where the problem was. That's where Kayin made his mistake. That's where Shaul HaMelech made his mistake. And that is why David HaMelech was okay and Shaul was not. Mechase peshav lo yatzliach. This is the opportunity that we have. And it's a gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, not one day, not just Rosh Hashanah, not just Yom HaKippur, but He gave us a gift of an entire season of Elul that gives us the chance to really think critically about the various aspects of life that have the opportunity to get back onto the Derech HaYashar. Elokim Asa Es HaAdam Yashar, God created us all that way. V'heim Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. During the year, we are so convoluted, we're so complicated, and we get involved in so many different cheshbonos, so many shvarim, truah, and so many different paths of life that are not meant to be the Derech HaYashar that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us on and to live by. And Chodesh Elul gives us that opportunity to once again realign. Like the Baal HaTanya said, HaMelech Basada, this is the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out in the field when He's looking for us. Dear Shu Hashem Bihi Matzo, this is the time when we are susceptible to the embrace. Ani ledodi vedodi li HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for our love. He's looking for our searching. He wants us to find Him. And the ultimate goal is Vuhu Yiyasher Archosecha. He will once again bring us back to that path of Yashrus, to that Tkiyah that we were all created with, to that path of life that we are all meant to live, the one which HaKadosh Baruch Hu aspires for all of us to be experiencing. And that is the time that Chodesh Elul, that Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, and Yom HaKippurim avails us to take advantage of. So we should take advantage of all